Welcome to On The Decks. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-hosts are the people that obviously you've come to watch. I'm going to say co-host because they'll probably be taken by one of these big media companies very soon. So, yeah, mine, Liberty Lana.
It hasn't happened in 40 years, though. I don't think you're in any...
You never know. You know how YouTube works, man. Yet. You know how it works. 1 minute you're chatting in front of a camera outside a football ground, next minute you're earning...
Yeah, true.
Yeah, there you go. How you guys doing?
I'm all good.
We finally decided to do it.
Yeah.
Was it how long has it been? 3 weeks? You can say we're going to do this?
Yeah. It's been in the planning for a while, hasn't it?
We must have been speaking for, 6 months? And then it wasn't until that random phone call the other day and I just...
Yeah.
It kind of all came out and it was like, oh, yeah, let's do it.
It's mad how we've kind of like got together with doing this, because I remember meeting you, about a year and a half ago? I think it was through LinkedIn, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you messaged me off as a one holiday.
A booty call, Junior.
Yeah.
Come on my show. But yeah, and then we just kept it from then. And obviously, you appeared on Shoot the Fence and all that, and a few other bits together. And you were just through TalkSport.
Yeah, randomly. You were on with someone that was late. It was late on a Saturday night. And I was driving to a gig in London. And I was actually promoting at the same time. So I was like, you know, the traffic light boards. So I was putting them up. And I jumped out of the car and jumped back in, and they were playing Little Bit of Luck. And I was like, check the radio, it's TalkSport, and I was like, why are they playing Garage and TalkSport for 3 o'clock in the morning? And then I started listening, and then people started talking about Eros, and started, oh yeah, and this DJ and that, and I remember this was my favourite tune, so I tweeted in and said, like, most random thing, on the way to a gig, listening to TalkSport to not listen to Garage, and they're playing Garage and talking about Eros. And then he tweeted me back straight away, it's like,
yes.
Yeah, wicked.
And they live happily ever after.
Yeah.
Yeah, blimey. So... let's talk about you, Saj, because you started off at
Palace. Yeah.
Right? You've got a strong affiliation with the club.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You follow them, obviously.
Yeah.
Would you say you feel much stronger towards them than all the other clubs you
play? Most definitely. It's the club that I started at, so, you know, you feel affiliated, come through all the ranks, play up to first team, so definitely somewhere that I've got a strong affiliation of on par with probably Arsenal, my team.
So when you started... what year was that? We're talking 90...
when I joined, so I was at 15, so about 92, some of 92.
YTS?
Under 15s, then YTS, the pro, first team.
So did you go through the whole rigmarole of cleaning boots and all that kind of stuff? Because I've spoken to like people like Carl Tyler and all these other ex-pros that obviously played back in the day, Mark Waters.
Yeah.
They're saying, we used to clean toilets, we used to clean the
seats. Yeah, you had to clean the whole training ground, man. Clean everything. Yeah.
But do you know what, just to interrupt you there, just so, because this is quite relevant, because with the music scene as well now, the DJing, it was exactly the same then. Like I got kind of, not picked up, I suppose is like kind of the right word, right? But I was around people that were doing parties, this one guy in West London primarily, and then I started giving out flyers for him, and then he'd take you out and be like, oh yeah, he dropped me at a club, I'll be back in an hour, I'll do that club, then go to another club. And it was like doing the apprenticeship, like you learn your trade via that. But now
everyone's going like, to the middle level.
Yeah, there's like 3-year-old DJs that are on YouTube that have got more followers than me, because it's about that now.
Mm.
And no one, I think it's quite detrimental that people miss out. There's a whole gap.
You need to know each level.
Yeah, you
need to know each level and appreciate where you are.
Because everyone at the moment, all they kind of have is that that 15 minutes of fame. They're all in that segment. Now, you need to feel what it's like to be at the bottom and like struggling to get up. Because even if you're on the social media and you're thinking, oh yeah, but I've only got 300 followers, and why has that DJ got more than me? Or why is that like that guy getting looked at by this scout? It's not about that. You've got to feel it at the bottom. You've got to get involved. And it's about people seeing what you've got, like what you've got about you. It's like I've got people, I met a few people at 51st State Festival on Saturday, actually, that they all kind of came through the ranks with me, like giving out flyers and stuff. And they're managing like major artists and stuff, but they learn their trade through me.
It's exactly.
Same with you.
So you could pass on your advice of what you've learned, et cetera, et cetera. But in the next generation, are they going to be able to do that?
Exactly. There's no one that knows like the hard work that goes behind the scenes, because anyone can go out and buy 300,000 Facebook followers or whatever, but it doesn't mean anything if you can't, like, if someone, like now, we're sitting down and you're going to ask me about, like, what was Club Line like in 97 and how did I do it? Someone's going to go, I bought all my followers and, like, I'm now headlining Glastonbury. Mm. It's like there's no story, there's no history there.
Yeah.
It's like you could talk about anything. You could probably tell stories from the things you heard in the dressing room and like altercations you saw between players.
Yeah, I mean, cause it's a lot different now. I mean, because they don't even clean boots or anything like that. I mean, they just come in, they've got, you know, it's deals already. Everything's all done for them. So they don't appreciate, you know, the hard work behind actually putting the team out, etc., etc.
But does it... Okay, it must
be... They don't appreciate their success.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It must sound like a stupid question, but do you kind of resent the younger players who are 18, 19 years old? They're on 10, 15 bags a week.
No, it's what you deserve. I mean...
Is it what they deserve? Because at 18, 19 years old, it's pro contract, 5 bags a week.
But it's what they're prepared to pay. If they're not prepared to pay it, then you won't get it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at Palace, Ray Houghton used to moan at us all the time. Said, "No, you're so lucky. When I was at Liverpool, I used to be on X amount."
Exactly.
and it goes through the generations. And I was like, when I get older, I don't ever want to be like that. Mm. You know, because you just get resentful of the person saying that to you, and you just switch off. You don't listen to what they actually say.
Mm.
So it's a different way of communicating to people.
There's a bubble at the moment in football, 100%, as in like Sky. And if that bubble bursts, then that's when I'd like to see the fall. Like what happens in the fall?
ITV Digital.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. It happened previously, and it did affect me because I was actually coming to the Bosman Wall at 24. Thinking I'm, you know, the season before everyone was getting double their money, etc., etc. When ITV Digital went bust, no one was getting clubs.
Mm.
They cherry picked the top people that they wanted and then say, right, you take it or leave it.
Mm.
I ended up taking about 40% of what I was earning previously. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's either take that or don't play.
It's not the same thing because there's no one backing the DJ scene at the moment, but. You've got, it's the same thing with the followers. Like they'll look at your followers. Well, they might look at your stats and your pace and what's your fitness like and your injuries. And they'll look at your followers. And it's like, well, he's got 30,000, he's got 4,000, he's got 8,000. And they'll look at that. And it's like, there's DJs out there that have got much more followers than me, but then they're nowhere near like the level I've got to, like in the garage scene especially. But they're getting the work over me because their followers, their Instagram's better and their social media.
So effectively that's the be all end all of it, because you see that in the media as well. You do see a lot of people appearing on your Sky Sports and your Talk Sports, not because that they put out decent content, but because they're popular, because whether they can rant in front of a camera or maybe they've just got some views that many people agree with, whether or not they're the correct views or whatever.
It's all about what you can sell now, like where your standing is and like what you can sell. Can you sell a rave? Can you sell a pair of boots for me? Can you sell a t-shirt? Like it's that. It's literally that.
It's all about that lad, Alex from Glasgow. That did what he did with Dave.
Yeah, he just jumped in with Dave, didn't he?
When you saw that, what did you think?
I didn't see it that happen. I heard about it, then looked at it. Fair play to him. But at the end of the day, the kid knew all the words.
Mm.
Like that's quite an achievement, and the thing is, the way I look at it, like I know what it's like standing in front of. I don't I'm behind this table now.
Mm.
If that was 100,000 people in front of me, I'd feel no, I don't care. But if you ask me to stand in front of the thing and pick up a mic, fuck that, I ain't doing it. It's not happening.
Is it because
for him, like someone that's never been on a stage before to jump up. Do the whole fair play.
It's about taking the opportunity
fair play to
you. And being ready for it.
But you saying that you couldn't grab a mic in front of 100,000 people, whatever, do that, right? Is that because you're more used to being a DJ?
No, I don't know. It's just something it's something I've never been able to do. I was on radio today. I was on Rinse today, and I was just talking normally. But I'm fine with it because I can't see anyone. There's no one standing there, telling me, calling me name, whatever. It's like, but when I'm standing on a stage, I'm looking at everyone, thinking. It's a weird effect. Like,
well, I'm sure you've had this discussion with other MCs before, and they said to you, look, once you're in that zone, you can't.
But I know MCs that now don't MC, that because they suffer from anxiety and the whole thing about they don't like the you are the focal point.
Attention,
but that generally that's more prevalent now, mental health, especially in entertainment, because it's probably. Being bought up because of social media as well.
You've got to think, if I'm standing here now and I'm DJing, if you two are in front of me on the mic, you take everything away from me.
Mm.
So I can, I'm in my little world. This is me, my 6 foot box. But you two, if like, I don't know, like one of your trousers fall down or you like fall over, it's you everyone sees. Mm. So it's like,
yeah, you still get heckled, don't you, the DJ? Yeah. Booth. I remember Eros, man. Come on, that would be yeah, right. And you're literally there with people.
Where was I? I got. I can't remember what it was. I was at Milton Keynes, and I was standing next to Pied Piper, and someone had a glass, a little like one of your tumbler glasses, and they were standing on the balcony, and they threw it to hit someone in that where the queuing area was, because we were just standing there waiting to get paid. And I'm talking to Piper like I'm talking to you now, and he pushed me in the face. I fell backwards. The glass smashed like in the alcove behind me. Because it like he literally just pushed me away like that, pushed me into the wall, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And he was like,
"The Matrix."
Bang! Yeah,
saw it coming.
Yeah, he saw the glass because he was looking where they were throwing it from. So it's you get like, it's you get that, but you get it as a footballer. So
yeah,
it's the same thing.
You get abused, but you just switch off.
What abuse do you get? Because let's talk about the whole racism thing, because we know that's been happening a lot. I'm sure you suffer from it.
Of course.
So how do you deal with that kind of stuff? Because I've spoke to Sunday Elise, right? And he said to me, people are just going to be people. If you react to it, then they win. Now, okay, I'm not sure how I would do it because I've never had that, been in that situation before, obviously. You know?
Yeah.
But as a Premier League footballer, as a footballer that's played in different divisions, you know, and in a country where we're trying to get away from that, and you've been born and bred here, you know, how does it feel? How do you react to it? Or how did you?
Well, I just turned around to the person. What did you say?
Oh, so you had it on the pitch as well?
No, I've had it with fans. What did you say? No, nothing, sorry. A couple of times. In a youth team game against Bristol City, actually.
In Bristol?
Yeah. Guy called me a black cunt. Like, what the fuck did you say? Yeah. He's like, nothing, sorry. As soon as you point someone out, they've got nothing to say. It's like on social media now. It's too easy to, you know, have an opinion and slag someone off and no consequences.
I've got a good friend of mine, he's a DJ of like he's started DJing with me in about 98, and he was at a Premier League team. I won't say now because I'm going to get him on and he's going to tell the story, but he was at a Premier League team in the youth setup, the academy, and he said that one day this coach came in and they didn't like no one liked him, especially like the black guys. And he said that one day he separated them, put all the black guys on one side and the white guys on the other. And he turned around to the white guys and said, right, all you lot, chase the black guys like they've just nicked your car stereo.
I mean, that was...
And that's a coach.
Yeah, that was normal back then. You used to have black v whites and, you know, people wouldn't put you through because they'd have a certain stereotype of you or, you know.
Would that be at certain clubs? Because I'd be very surprised if at the time that you were playing at Palace...
No, at Palace, that didn't...
South London is a hotbed.
It didn't really happen because there was a number of black players. But, you know, at the time we did have Ron Nosey came out and said, you know, black players go missing in the winter.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was on a BBC TV programme.
Mm.
You know. So...
Wow. Blimey. So, let's move on to what you're time at Palace, and were you there when Lombardo was playing?
Yes.
What was he like? Because
lovely
he was
guy.
A quality footballer.
Top professional, lovely guy. I don't think anyone's got a bad word to say about him, to be honest. I mean, even when things were going bad, he still, you know, was a shining example to all the young professionals at the club and all the pros. You know, everyone looked up to him.
So were you there when he got the player coach role, the player manager role?
Yeah, but the club was already getting relegated from the Premier League then, you know, so I think they was already planning for the next managers coming, who was Terry Venables after that, because the club was being sold as well to Mark Goldberg from Run Notes.
Right.
So it was always up in the air at that time, so, you know, it didn't really worry too much about it.
And then after Palace?
As a Colchester for a few months, so... Basically, when I signed my first deal, bad money. I went to Colchester, two and a half times my money. Played there and I wanted to be guaranteed first team football because Palace had just gone into administration. They wanted to play a lot of the older players to sell them off. So we had like Andy Linegan, Gordon Petridge, who were on like big money at the time. So I was kind of the fall guy who playing reserves and stuff like that. At 21, I didn't want to be playing reserve football anymore. I had a taste of first team football, and I wanted to continue my journey.
Andy Linnigan scored that cup final goal against Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it? Back in 92, I want to say.
Yeah, beat Mark Brighton there.
Another Crystal Palace player. You being an Arsenal fan yourself, what was that like playing alongside him?
Oh, it was great because I learned loads of him because he played for Arsenal. At that time, Arsenal had a great defence. Not like now.
Colin Mustafa's half decent, isn't he?
I mean, he would you know, give me little tips. So it'd be great training with him because you'd learn a lot of him and he's always very easy to talk to as well. So,
did you ever have any players that didn't want to help you? But as in, like, they were like, no, I've learned my stuff myself.
No, people were pretty alright, you know. They weren't, if you're part of the team, you know, I don't know, you'd ask certain people.
Yeah.
You'd ask certain players, you know, for help. You'd always have affiliate, you know, little groups and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd always ask certain people and, you know.
I wonder if it, because it's like, me asking someone for music, you know, like, someone, not so much now, but like, when we were buying vinyl, when it, like, now it's an MP3, it's easy to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You can just buy it on eBay, but it's, if certain people had certain vinyls, it's like, oh, can I get a copy? Can I? It's like, you know, like,
because
they don't want you to stand out.
I don't think so. It's probably a bit different because, you know, with dub plates and etc. It's, you know.
No, it's funny, you know that. You look at some players and you think, I bet he's an arsehole.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure people probably thought about that if they saw me on the pitch, but it's very totally different off the pitch. It's like in a work situation. You're very different in work than you are outside work.
Well, it goes back to what you said about being a DJ, because, you know, in the whole MC thing where you're on the decks and obviously the MC's out in front and you're doing your own thing, you're kind of in the zone. As a footballer, the same sort of thing. Once you get on the pitch, you're a different animal, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've told me stories about players that you clanged into.
Yeah.
Right? We're not going to mention any names. Yeah. Right? But you told me, because it's the competitive streak.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just something that it's in your DNA, isn't it?
Yeah, you totally change. When you go into professional football, you know, it's like, right, if we draw this game, then, you know, that's extra money that taking food out of my kid's mouth or something like that. So that's the way I used to go into thinking into games, you know. So, and I'd always had that winning mentality. I hate losing anything.
Mm. What about the whole DJ thing? I mean, is there like a competitive streak between all the DJs out there? Or are you all just... Because I know you guys have been friends for years.
Yeah,
you know,
no, there always have been.
Off Cup Lloyd and all that.
There always has been. It's, there's... It's a bit like the football league. You've got the Champions League DJs. Then you've got like the people fighting for like Europa League and that sort of stuff. And then you've got like the middle ground. And then you've got your relegation DJs. So there's always people. So if you ring me and ask me for a price, and then you'll ring six other people you'll message them now on social media, or you go to their agents or whatever, and he's like, well, I'll get him, and I really want him, but he's that much. But if I get him, he's not as big as him, but he's like £200 less. It's like, there's that competitive nature.
Right, okay.
Because it doesn't... Now it's about... They'll look at... Well, Martin's got 6,000 people on Instagram, and he's this much. But that guy's £200 less than him, but he's got 3,000 people on... And they'll weigh up like
that. Yeah, of course.
It won't matter that, like, you're standing... Like, unless you're like the top levels and you're going for an agent, and the agent's like, no, he's that price, now leave me alone, but find out.
Right.
And that's it. But when you're the people that are fighting for the Champions League places underneath, that's like, it's a bit like that.
But surely lineage and reputation
doesn't really matter.
No?
Sometimes it does. It's like, if I go to the, like, in the Midlands, for example, like any promoters around Birmingham, Wolverhampton sort of area, they just book me because they know that I'm a good name out there, because I've probably played in Birmingham about 500 times.
Mm.
So it like back in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, I was in Birmingham and the Midlands and like those sort of areas more than I was in London. It just kind of became second home to me. So they'll ring me or contact me. I've got a booking for you, no problem. What's the price? That, yeah, done. In London, it's very, like, very cutthroat.
Mm. Right, so you've DJed in Birmingham, you've played football in Birmingham. You've been on nights out in Birmingham.
Yeah.
You know about nights out. What's the difference between Birmingham and London? What would you say? in terms of attitude, in terms of the vibe, so to speak?
Depends where you go and what club, what area, like the event. What, I know it sounds stupid, but what the dress code is up there. Because there are, if you, I said, when I was first DJing up there in like 97, 98, when the Gary scene was really first starting to like take a massive hold, I remember going up there and people were dressed in gloves and they had like masks on and like hoodies on and tracksuits and trainers. And when I was running the Coliseum, we weren't even having people in jeans.
Mm.
It was like trousers and shoes and like shirts and dresses for the girls and all that. And I remember coming back and telling people, because I was one of the early DJs to play out there, and I was telling people, do not, like, don't change your dress code. We've got to keep it as it is. Like, in Birmingham, it's a bit lawless. And then it started to become like that in London, and that's when a lot of the trouble happened. But Birmingham was, it was really good. Like, I love playing in Birmingham, but it's like probably my favourite city to play in, to be honest. And the vibe is like, it's intense, but it's like they rave, but it's edgy. And I've been in some situations. I've been held at gunpoint at Birmingham.
Wow, you want to talk about that?
It is edgy.
You want to talk about that?
The guy pulled a Mac 10 on me.
For why? Where were you?
I was in a club. I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was opposite the old Kudos. There's a big club called Kudos in Birmingham.
There's one in Watford.
By the roundabout of the Bullring, yeah. And it was like, you know, one of those shopfront clubs.
Mm-hmm.
That someone's just like basically bought a shop, turned it into an event. But no, but like, you know, like the Whitford Your House sort of thing, one of them ones. And it was really long. And I remember turning up there and I was running to the door. And I got in the club, got on, and MC Rankin was on the mic with me. And I played my first tune and mixed it in, and he just appeared and he goes, yeah, take it back. And I said, no, don't worry about like introducing me, just carry on. He goes, no, stop the music. I said, no, don't worry about it. He said, mine. He goes, someone's just been shot on the door. I was like, well, I said, brother, I just walked in. And it turned out that there was these two guys that were walking towards the club, and I'd run past them as like to get in the club, and they were targeted by a drive-by as I got past the club. All the police were outside. Then when we came out, I went back in to get, I said to the police, I need to go in and get my records and my money. Yep, no problem, go back in. Went back in, and the guy that was paying me, he gave me, it was half my money, because my agent taking the other half. But some guy with him took mad offence to it. And he was like, no, we ain't having that. You play one record, I'm not paying you money. I said, bruv, that ain't my fault. I've played and I've gone. No, you're not doing it. I said, look, I'm going, okay? And he was like, no, and he lifted his top up and he had a Mac 10. He had a Mac 10 in his belt.
Wow.
With the police on the door. Bearing in mind, they're like probably 30 foot away.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, obviously, I'm like, I see that, and I'm like, my balls went, and I'm like, bro, right, come on. He's like, give me the fucking money, give me my money back. And then I gave him the money back, he gave it back to the promoter, promoter was like, no, take it, just let him have it. No, fuck that, because I'm taking your records as well. And he took my records. And then three other guys that were in the club, they were hanging around, and I thought they were with him. And all of a sudden, then they've come over, and they're like, what's the problem? What's going on? No, it's none of your business. No, to all of a sudden, yeah, it is our business. They all pulled out guns on this guy. Wow. So now I've got a guy with a Mac 10 in his belt and three guys with guns. And it turned out that the three guys that had the guns were people I was DJing for, like a week or a couple of weeks later in Birmingham. And they saw what was going on. They got my records back, then escorted me out of the club. Walked me to my car and I said, look, I need petrol. And I, right near where I parked, there was a petrol garage. It's really random, because it's right near the Bullring. And then they were standing around my car, like all with like that, with the guns in their hands. So they didn't know if this guy was going to be coming out of the car. With the police, like 40 foot away. They then escorted me to the M6. And then they started flashing me and they pulled in front of me. I was like, oh, here we go. Now I'm going to get carjacked by this lot. They pulled over and the guy's got out of the car and he's like, he's run up to my window. And he went like that, and he just put his hand in. Obviously, I thought he was putting the gun in the car. And he goes, just make sure you turn up for me in a couple of weeks, yeah? And he, like, there was like £160 in his hand in cash that him and the two guys had pulled together and gave to me.
Yeah, Birmingham's edgy.
Like, yeah.
Birmingham is edgy. But it was from London as well. Crazy. I used to rave. I used to live up there. And there was always an edge there.
Do you remember, did you ever go to Fozzie's?
No.
Which is like, it's basically where West Brom's ground is.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like, that was an experience. That's what I'm saying on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an experience.
Unfortunately, there's some things we can't repeat.
Yeah, that was an experience.
That's all right.